Hello and welcome to the Sid Warrior podcast. Thank you so much for joining in. Today we have Dr. Rashi Agarwal. We will be talking about psychiatry, about mental health, about the problems that teenagers go through in the country, and a bit of spirituality. I'm very excited for this conversation. I hope you are as well. Rashi, thank you for joining in.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It is an absolute amazement when you see people around the globe and you're hundreds of kilometers away and sharing the same enthusiasm about mental health. These talks raise awareness on a day-to-day basis, and let's have this conversation right now.
Lovely. Where are you speaking from?
I am based out of Meerut, UP.
Acha, okay. So
and you?
I just looked at your Instagram profile. Very interesting. It's you've done MD psychiatry.
Yeah.
Amazing. I'm from Mumbai. I've been practicing as a neurologist for the last 2 years. I've done MD in medicine and then DM in neurology. How how have you been managing in the last?
In our family.
Sorry?
A lot of DM neuros in our family.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Kind of a difficult branch, obviously, super specialization, first of all.
Yeah, it's you get the hang of it, though. That's so. The reason that I wanted to take it up was because I was initially interested in psychology, and somehow I missed that boat, and I ended up going into the medicine route. So I thought the only way to get back into human behavior was through neuroscience. How is the?
A lot of things are very overlapping in our branches.
Absolutely. Do you feel that? Going ahead, all of this will eventually merge into one holistic understanding of human behavior and why we are the way we are.
But maybe somewhere down the line, they have this separate branch about like brain, and there is some specialties under that. So like we specifically need child psychiatry to be a very separate MD branch rather than a super specialization.
That is such an insightful comment, because there is... so much difference in the way that you deal with an adult or a child. And in fact, even in psychiatry, just like in medicine, why should adult and pediatrics be any different if you are saying that the body is the same? So that's a very insightful comment. I never thought about that. MD adult psych and MD child psych to be different branches. Incredible. What is your area of interest?
My area of interest is how women have somewhere be socio-culturally, hormonally, and emotionally more susceptible to any kind of psychiatric illnesses. So we are not just focusing on the hormonal fluctuation due to menstruation, but also how the socio-cultural expectations put an added burden on them about n number of psychiatric disorders, many of them which are just manageable by lifestyle changes and maybe a little bit change in the society.
Wow. There is so much of involvement in all the factors that you mentioned, even in the diseases that I treat. So when it comes to migraine, when it comes to fibromyalgia, when it comes to chronic fatigue syndrome, there is definitely a preponderance of women in these branches. And earlier, the idea was to dismiss them as hysteria. But thankfully, now our understanding has evolved much more than that. And we know that there are so many more factors that we cannot oversimplify this.
Absolutely. And one more thing is that now, I think with any kind of chronic illness, be chronic fatigue syndrome or anywhere, usually there's this caregiver fatigue as well as somewhere the person has been maybe a lot stigmatized into feeling that they're feigning it. Because we know that there is no definitive cure. There is a lot of things that go unnoticed or maybe unmanaged and untreated, and the person may be suffering. So especially in our branch, we say that a person suffers anywhere from 2 to 5 years before going to the right practitioner and getting the right treatment. And before that, they were just doing these magical religious interventions. And aside that, just being labeled as feigning it or malingering mode.
Yeah, yeah. That is one of the biggest shameful aspects of therapy and mental health, that for the longest time, because of our lack of understanding, we were essentially in denial of this entire system, of this entire field. And we thought that burying our head in the sand will just make it go away. or making somebody else bury their head in the sand. So, in spite of them being the sufferers, they were told to ignore it. Which, if you compare it with all other fields, somebody having a heart attack will not be told to, you know, just go for a run, just forget about it, read a book, and you'll.
Absolutely. So, I think these are the most common examples that I use on a daily basis, starting from that, which I think when people come to a psychiatrist, they have been to a number of clinicians before that, be it an MD medicine, be it anybody. But yes, they have this one thing in common that they come and tell that I have been told repeatedly that stop thinking about it. Maybe it is not coming from a bad place. I understand the other clinician also wants to help. But somehow I've made it a point not to use these words ever because if it wasn't their control, they would. So I always try to associate it with any physical illness that just by thinking you can't make your diabetes go away and see your knees are paining for such long, just think about it that it's not paining. See, we understand how silly that sounds. That's why related to mental health and you realize that, oh, we are doing something so wrong without even realizing. It's a very common notion, I think, in medical colleges and OPDs also. Every day you say, "Socho mat zyada, forget about it. It hoega, aaram ho jayega. Socho na chhodo iske bare mein."
It's such an primitive response to something. One of the challenges that I've often faced is that if there is a relative with them, with the patient, now the relative is trying to be supportive, but the relative is saying to the patient that, hey, you should just forget about it, and he's looking towards a doctor to get support for his statement. Now, how do we correct the relative without alienating them? How do we tell them that this is the wrong way to look at it and still make sure that they are supportive of the patient?
We always consider the socio-economic and cultural background the patient is coming from because we are practicing in a tier two city. And again, we have patients from further rural areas, tier three also, and they have just no understanding. I will not even say basic is not even in cities. So completely no understanding. And plus, I've always felt that the more the patient is from a rural area, the less stigma they feel. Somehow they just want to get treated. They do not care that you are a psychiatrist, you're a physician, you're a neurosurgeon, you're a physician. They just want treatment. So they don't carry that much stigma. So we generally start from a very, very basic analogies and say that, see, this is mind, this is brain. So this is something that in the psychology or in the psychiatric community, we refer this to an electric box. That you see electric box in your house, when you see that, it's okay. But until and unless the wires inside are functioning, the current does not pass. So we use very everyday household articles to make them realize that the mind and the brain is not the same thing. So you sometimes see how their eyes light up and when they realize that, oh, this is something very big I have understood today and why I was not aware of it before that. Obviously, a lot of education and your socio-cultural aspect come into that way. And again, my or your 5 minute, 10 minute interaction with the patient is not going to change when they go back to the same society and they have to live there. But we can still, the basic purpose of coming to a psychiatrist is not, I would just say, treatment purpose. But they should carry some kind of psychoeducation back home, which they can impart to others also. So that generally what we are working on is that normalization and generalization, that if you, first of all, you're not alone, because this is the feeling that I have never seen anybody else suffering from the same illness. And so you have to repeatedly tell them, see, you have not told anybody about your illness. Similarly, others have not told you about it. Whereas when we see that people visit your house and everybody's laughing and saying, "Don't put sugar in my tea," or "You also don't because I'm diabetic," or "You are diabetic," and it's so generalized and normalized, and everybody laughs over it. So we feel that it is such a normal thing to have. So I am not having any stigma regarding diabetes. Whereas there have been studies in 1960s and 70s which showed that diabetes had a very high relation with depression. Any kind of chronic illness, because you have to deal with it on a day-to-day basis.
One interesting thing about mental health is that how much the social awareness and social support becomes part of the problem and the solution. Much more than in the case of diabetes, in mental health, sometimes the problem is the social lack of social support, and the solution is social support. So that in that respect, the conversation becomes even more important.
Yeah, so we were just having this discussion 2, 3 days back when we're getting a lot of messages now. We meet aspirants that should I take a PG in psychiatry or not? So I very clearly said, so this is the only branch where the disease, the doctor, and the patient, everybody is equally stigmatized. So if you are going into PG psychiatry, make sure that you are able to fight the stigma on a day-to-day basis, and it will get to you on some days. You are not above any human. So there are days when you really feel that I wish I would have done something else, because somewhere maybe in the other branches, maybe the weightage lies on the person to get well. And here it is somewhere on the doctor to get you well as soon as possible, which we know that there's no magic drug to do that. So every day you are kind of overselling yourself and the medications that they will work. No, give them time, they will work. So this overselling and everyday emphasis on not stopping the medication, it is a never-ending process, and it's like fitted here like a tape recorder. So as soon as the patient comes, you're like, play again, the same thing again and again and again,
Like a
overselling yourself.
positive reinforcement that you have to give them hope about their own lives, that things will get better. You mentioned about students, so I had an interesting question on that. Are you seeing a rise in the number of mental health problems in students, or maybe they are more open about it and they're coming forward with it?
See, we know that somewhere the only silver lining COVID has is that somewhere the emphasis maybe on mental health awareness has increased, because when people were alone and they had a lot of time on their hands and they felt that, oh, something somewhere is wrong, which I did not notice before. Maybe I was working or XYZ reasons. So it's as small as I would say, starting from 2.5 to 3 year olds, we are getting a lot of ADHD, autism. Just because maybe I would not say entirely, but that would have been like that would be missed if they started preschool or they started KGs, because they were not spending all the time at home.
And
Maybe
parents can
two
notice it.
kids. But yes, there are some very severe cases which you cannot miss any of, but the subtle ones are also coming up. Plus, every day when especially with young children, parents come to you, they already have this autism diagnosis in their hand, because everybody has a very good reachability on the internet, and anything you search regarding your child, autism will just pop up. So that is kind of a universal diagnosis, because a lot of things fit into autism, but that is the work of a professional to tell them, no, this is not autism, this could be a number of other things. Plus, one more thing that people are not talking about a lot is social media addiction in late teens and early 20s.
Got it. The so-called generation of kids who take things too seriously, or the generation of kids who are too overly sensitive, that is such a mischaracterization. In fact, I would suggest that they are just more aware of their own mental ups and downs, and that is a healthy thing, to be aware of your own limits, because if you're not aware, then the chances are that you might break something. So instead of calling them overly sensitive, let's give them props for at least paying attention to their mental state.
That is very, very true. Plus, again, the person who's always with oppression, the thing is that any person who's benefiting out of it will never want to call it out. So similarly, when we see these young children setting boundaries, the other person, especially the other family members, they feel very uncomfortable that maybe that we did not do used to do it in back in our day. How are you doing it with us? Because boundary settings, you know, in Indian settings, there's nothing like a healthy boundary setting. Everybody marches into everybody's physical and personal space.
It's the old toxic residency phenomenon, right? That a student will enter into residency, have a shit year because of the way their seniors treat him. And when he becomes a senior, he thinks, of course, this is the way to behave. This is how I should treat my juniors. And that cycle continues. This happens in every family as well.
But yes, see, we are seeing this kind of a change. Maybe with passing each year or generation, there is an improvement. Just see our generation. Maybe when we were in class grade 10, imagine we would not have heard these words, anxiety and depression, on a day-to-day basis. And even if we knew the words, we did not know what they actually mean. And now when you see your little brothers, sisters, or nephews and niece, they talk about anxiety so openly, so somewhere that brings me that kind of happiness that yes, change is coming, because they're so aware that, hey, so I have a niece, she's around in grade 7, and she says these kind of things that, but there's a girl in my class and she has anxiety. I'm like, wow. So I was more than being concerned, I was just happy about it that as small children are so open about talking these things and they're okay with it, rather than our generation being like,
Let's not talk about
yeah.
mental health, कुछ तो प्रॉब्लम है.
So they are being open about it, and that's somewhere good, because the more we normalize it, the more, as you said, so social awareness is also part of the problem as the solution.
Do you sometimes find yourself playing devil's advocate, even in conversations with your close friends or with yourself, that this could be taken too far? Is there such a thing that if you make this like anxiety becoming an everyday occurrence, it is challenging for some people to understand the nuance of it, because then it could be equated to feeling helpless or feeling trapped, because anxiety, after all, is a normal physiological phenomenon unless it becomes a dysfunction, unless it becomes a disorder. So not everybody may be able to see the difference between anxiety and anxiety disorder. So what's your take on this?
Yes, this is something that now that we are somewhere, I would say glamorization of anxiety, especially coming to social media. So this is something that again, this will depend on the social strata you are in. So the more upwards you go in the class, the more it is becoming something that it's like a fancy handbag that you should possess.
Sure.
So, but we are also trying to normalize that. See, it is a normal thing. We all have anxiety, just like you're happy, just like you feel sad. It's like we get these requests. Can you give me some happy pills? I said, there's nothing like any happy pills. You're supposed to feel sad. You're supposed to cry at times. So that's why.
Only in a therapist's office and in a beach in Goa do you hear questions like that.
There's so many questions like, no, just give me something that does not make me cry. That is also not healthy. So especially when you talk about these middle-aged men who are in the late 40s and 50s, and you ask them, we know that depression presents differently in men than in women. So especially with men, when you ask that, do you feel like crying? So they will take a pause and analyze, and they'll just say no. Like, do you feel irritable? They'll be very quick to say, yes, I do. Because again, they don't have this a customization, maybe, that it's okay for them to cry. And I said, go and have a cry today and see how better you feel about
Oh,
it.
do
Because
you
they,
actually advise that? Do you actually say that?
yeah, I'm saying, why are you holding yourself back? If you're feeling irritable and if you want to cry, go ahead and do that. A lot of, see, when we say that it's about females are being having a number of complaints, but we also don't forget that men have this somewhere burden of over-masculinization, or maybe that they are the head of the family, they're not supposed to break down ever. So in maybe in our family, crying is encouraged somewhere, that it's okay if you are crying. This is a healthy response, that nobody has ever been like, oh, you are a boy, so you shouldn't cry about it.
Right. So the challenge of asking a 50-year-old man to suddenly cry is they could just undergo an identity crisis if they identify themselves as, I'm always strong and I will never cry. They may think that, man, I'm not only depressed, but I'm also weak. So that is a very tricky line to cross, and we have to guide them through that as well, that it doesn't have to be that way. Strength is not equated to not crying.
This is a very, very difficult social conditioning to break, because any kind of mental health issue is associated with being mentally weak, that you are not strong enough, you don't have willpower. Because we have to, that's why I said, first, whenever you go to a psychiatrist for the first time, have at least 35, 40 minutes in your hand, because you will be given a lot of lecture type that this is normal, this is not normal. And many times, even if there's a couple who've come for any reason and they have a little son, so you will get this kind of a lecture that don't teach him these things now. Like, you are already suffering. Do you understand how life would have been better if you were not overburdened by this fact that I am the head of the family and I'm never supposed to cry. I can't feel irritated or I can't have bad days. So at least don't pass this notion on to this little guy here, so that they bring up, like, let's work towards a more gender fluid society. Believe me, half of these problems will really be solved if we are just being like, if we are okay emotionally equal, then also we are working towards financial, economic, all kind of social equality.
One of the challenges that I face is how to incorporate awareness of mental health and empathy with the idea that resilience should be built. You need both. So whenever we talk of resilience and we talk of inner strength, people tend to take things to the extreme. So resilience meaning मैं किसी से डरता नहीं हूँ. Resilience means कि मैं कुछ भी कर सकता हूँ. I am not going to cry. There is no sign of weakness. That is also not correct. But saying that Anything can make me crumple up. I am so in tune with my feelings that the slightest bit of anxiety and I will stop working. It is called self-care. Well, that is also not correct because society cannot function that way. How do you find the balance between resilience and self-care?
We prescribe therapy. See, underlying notion is that only, and especially I would say when we do these workshops for college students or grade 11, 12 students, we strictly advise, and maybe somewhere in the system, like you have awareness drive for menstrual health in a lot of good school that's happening, especially when girls are in the sixth, seventh class. We are encouraging that let boys be also there, first of all. And secondly, we say that this kind, one kind of, one therapy session should be mandatory for all. Be it in your, like you have this career counseling. So maybe
Exactly.
when you enter college or maybe when you're second, third year before your placement. So anywhere, at least in their early adult life, give and introduce them that this is therapy. If they feel that they are benefiting out of it or they feel that there's some unresolved things, they might just continue going to forward. Because again, yes, I read this somewhere that everything cannot be equated or solved with self-care. Now we've started using self-care very loosely. So if I'm having a good bath, it's like self-care. So like, no, this is basic hygiene. This is not self-care. You're supposed to kind of have a bath. Just lighting. Maybe Netflix has also a lot of things to do with this self-care, this lighting up candles and having a good bubble bath, which you know is very difficult in an Indian context. Your parents will bang, break the door open and come inside the bathroom.
कि मतलब एक ही बाथरूम है, बाहर लोग खड़े हैं, सबको काम पे जाना है, तुम यहाँ
Obviously,
बबल बाथ ले रहे हो।
so many things we westernization, I would say, is not a bad term, but say we are living in a westernized society now. But equating it that with our everyday things has to be somewhere regulated. These kids, they see everything, these Netflix and Prime shows, and they feel the college life is going to be like that. And when you go into college and you're like, oh.
That's not it.
I would say that is true for us also. We grew up seeing this Sanjeevani, and when you go into medical college, you're like, this is not what I imagined this to
I
be.
think, at least from my memory, that disillusionment is a big part of growing up as a doctor. Because you grow up thinking that the life as a doctor is going to be like this, and residency is the exact opposite. There is no time, there is no money, there is no respect. All the things that you may have wanted
Respect
to.
is kind of, I think when I started my residency, so my father, the one or two things he said before going there was like, first of all, don't talk, just be quiet. Second, he's like, forget that you have any respect. Like, you know that because people who've done residency these 30, 40 years back, they had like, their life was like very, very tough. I would say residency these days is tough, but nothing compared to what they were doing. They were actual actors, like running for vegetables and everyday chores for their professors.
Sure.
So they were like, yeah, forget you have any, like this part of respect left in you. You are worse than a donkey and a dog. You are just a resident. That's what you are.
Unbelievable. And there is an entire generation of doctors who have grown up with this idea. Things are actually better now, although residents who are undergoing residency right now may not think so when you've not slept for 3 days, but still, it is better, believe it or not. There is this whole idea of teenage angst. It's not anxiety, it's not depression, but more and more children have this sense of restlessness. Like, I don't know what to do, I don't know who I am, I don't know who I should be. Earlier on, say 100 years ago, for both good and bad reasons, decisions were made by their preceding generation. So kids had lesser choice. Now, choice is always good, but there's also the paradox of choice, which can leave you very confused and unsure of what to do. Do you have any advice to give for children who don't fit into any mental health disorder, but who are just restless and unsure?
Whereas, yes, you clearly said that this may be elders taking decision with more experience for somewhere better. Again, we always bring this concept of westernization in one world, that it has a lot of benefits, but it is also with a lot of drawbacks. So earlier you were being compared to your neighbor's son or your chacha's son. today you have the liberty of comparing yourself to somebody who's living on a different continent and doing something completely different that has not even been introduced in your society as yet.
Correct.
So there's so many options, and obviously when you give something out of the box to your parents and they will resist it because first of all they have not heard about it, and again they feel that isse ghar nahi chal sakta. What are you talking about? We need food to eat na, how will you
Yeah.
learn about this?
What is this
Yes,
social influencer? What is this job?
yeah. So I will give a very very personal example. So my husband is a super specialization in digital marketing. So when initially he started doing his MBA and then he went on to do a super specialization there, and this is what his father said, that first of all, we don't understand what you are doing, and secondly, do you think you will be able to sustain a family with this? Because the generation gap and the different thing they're doing, they're like, I don't even think you can have one meal on your
Wow.
table proper. Because it's not about that it was not earning that well, it's because no one around them is doing that. I will always say that, see, dreams are good, but somewhere we also advocate that it's not wrong to know your limitations. We are not motivational speakers, which somewhere gets very irritating. Do your best, anything is possible, reach for the heights. It's good to think about these things, but maybe when you're in your 20s, it's good to have that mentality, but also see the reality on paper. So suggestive to do a pro and con list, whatever career switching you want or whatever the kind of person you want to be, talk to that particular people if you have an access to them. Especially with social media, now you have access to n number of people, and I've talked to so many people from different professions, and they're very readily available and have these videos or personalized talks or workshops where you could just go and ask them about their career prospects and these future options or whatever. But don't just base your imagination thinking about one person you're seeing over the internet and they're making good money or good lifestyle out of it. Every day, we encourage you to remember that this is people's feet, not people's lives.
Such an important point. It's a curated view of what they want you to see.
So even if I would say sadness, if there is this in the movie yesterday somewhere I was watching, so somebody was saying that you would not now even not cry without a camera so that your sadness does not go waste. You would want to make content or mint money out of it. So it's not that even if you are seeing sadness, that is, even that's not real life.
There is this whole movement that says, so what? If it's the reason that we are not trained to do that is because that was not there till now. But then going ahead, we are moving into a hyper-connected society. And more kids will be born in that hyper-connected society. So I still feel that for myself and maybe for you also, it still seems odd. But that is because our formative years were still, we were still brought up without Instagram, without WhatsApp. Now, a kid who is born in 2021 will grow up, will probably have as his first birthday gift a virtual reality headset, when they're 3 or 4. Now, for that kid, what is real? What does it mean crying by themselves, and what does it mean connecting to friends? So that is one question that I often think about, that how do we even begin to advise somebody on career and how to manage their lives? Because I don't think we are equipped to deal with the rate at which things are changing. Especially as a psychiatrist, how do you deal with this problem?
Before even internet and Facebook came to India, already in Washington there were de-addiction centers for internet addiction. So somewhere Facebook here picked up in 2008 and 9. It was launched in 2004, and even before that in 1999 somewhere Washington had an internet de-addiction center. So imagine, before the facilities came to us, there was already something for an addiction. So this is very very much needed now. That's why we have this Rishikesh detox now. That you keep your phone at home and 3 days digital detox is happening. It is a
What's with
very
the air
wonderful
quotes?
question. You know that all kinds of things that would happen
All
here.
I know is they come back very happy. I don't know what is happening there.
Again, yes, we are not equipped. Again, our training does not cover that. Now, per se, any psychiatry textbook is not very equipped to somehow diagnose a social media addiction and what's real and what's not. Maybe with passing time, as I said, there's going to be a very big branch called Mind, and everything will fall under that. That this is a specialization. Now, see, where like medicine, surgery, Mind. This is now where you have to go and do. Like, are you more willing to go for de-addiction? Do you want to go into this category of child psychiatry or adult psychiatry? Because see, now even people are not aware de-addiction happens in psychiatry. They feel de-addiction happens in this Nasha Mukti Kendra, which whose ad is on these highways, painted on the roads,
Sure.
and psychosexual disorders are treated with those highway ads only.
Yeah.
And all of these things happen under psychiatry. See, so much awareness. De-addiction, especially, I would say that should encompass these illicit substance, drugs, alcohols, as well as internet addiction. This is very need of the hour, because we have seen, especially after COVID, how much our lives have been dependent on internet addiction and just not able to differentiate what's real. Did you know that 4 or 5 days back, when there was this social media blackout,
Yep. Facebook was down.
Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp was down, Pornhub had a 30% increase in their traffic that night. So that's how much we're dependent on technology. That if one thing is not working, we are so quick to switch over there, because we can't have even a forceful detox for ourselves.
Twitter had put out a tweet saying, "Hello, literally everyone."
Yeah. Okay. Because I was also there on Twitter to see that what's happening, and every
What's
one of
going on?
us did that, switching on and off the router, blaming each other that you are using internet more, that mine is not working.
You know, when we were kids, sometimes the electricity used to go out. So sometimes it would go out in just one flat, and so people would lean out of the window to see if baki sabke ghar mein current hai kya. And sometimes you could see that the entire building or the entire society's light is out. And if it is out for more than 2 3 minutes, slowly, slowly people will start coming out of the building and they will aggregate in the lawn outside and start talking to each other. Ki kya ho raha hai? That was the feeling I got where everybody met on Twitter to
Yeah, so
ask
you
ki
are
sabka current.
you based in Mumbai, so you feel that is very childhood days for you. I would say that is teenage for me, because
Oh
we live in
no.
a tier two city. So yes,
My
now this does
apologies.
not happen. So now this does not happen that light goes out for that much duration of time, and we have inverter generators, everything here.
Right,
I think the
right.
light does not go out there at all. Is that
No.
so?
No, yeah, it's an anomaly if it does.
Oh, so maybe 10 years down the line we reach there, but still here we have this all metro construction going on. So hence now we have still 6 7 hours power outage. We did not have this last year.
Okay.
So, but still this happens. If in the evening there's a little kid in the house and your light is not there, you'll ask the kid to go and check if everybody else's light is coming or not. So that person does that job still. So maybe in tier two, three cities, it will take another 10 years for us to come out of these basic lifestyle need issues.
But even before that, we have already seen the effect of Facebook being down, that everybody lands up on Twitter. There is a one question that I keep getting asked about how to find a therapist. Who is the right therapist, or what is the first door to open when somebody knows that something is wrong and they are not expected to diagnose? That is not their job. Their job is to just be self-aware enough to know that something is wrong so that they can approach for help. And this is a question sometimes that even I don't really know the right answer. So, according to you, what would be the best door to open for somebody to enter into that world of mental health and finding out what is wrong?
Yes, this is a question that I also get on a day-to-day basis, that suggesting a good therapist. Who is a good therapist? I would not say that any one person can be a good therapist. A good therapist is somebody who does not judge you, makes you feel comfortable enough to open up. So just like you would not go to a new doctor, you would ask your friends and family members to suggest you, unless if somebody is treating someone in your family. Again, there is a notion that no, never go to one person alone. So initially there is a thing called discovery calls, which a lot of therapists offer, in which they do a 20, 30 minute call or a Zoom call with you, and they discuss that. And it is very okay to ask them their qualifications, which
Right.
is somewhere not normalized in our society. So imagine a patient coming to us be like, qualification, the senior doctor will be get up and go out. But in therapy, this is a very, very normal thing. So if you are talking to a therapist of discovery call, you can ask them that, how much have you studied? What is your qualification? And is this your area of expertise? And this is my issue. So we suggest anywhere from 2 to 3 years, 2 to 3 people, go and talk to these therapists, and whoever you feel comfortable enough with, go ahead with it. But
Right.
never just be like you talk to one person and you move ahead.
Mm.
At least 2 to 3, because then you will know that this is the difference between both of them. And then again, I am comfortable enough with this. So it could be based on gender, it could be based on how they made you feel, and if they are expert enough. So we have a lot of therapists. First of all, the main thing I would say, first of all, educational qualifications.
Yeah.
But in this area of co-occurring, we know that even a lot of it's everywhere, correctly, not just in our field. So a lot of unqualified people are also giving out therapy, and this, I will tell you names where not to look for. So it's life coach. These kind of things, if they don't mention very clearly that they are a psychotherapist or a counselor, it means that they are using other words to just avoid the legality.
Right.
So
That's a
they
very
should be
important thing.
having, they should be having a post-graduation or and a PhD that makes them legally qualified. And in India, it is from an RCI registered institute. And then after that, depends on number of courses or diplomas that they go in to narrow it down. Like a lot of people do in family counseling, some do in family or couples counseling. Somebody is
Right.
very, so there are some kind of somatic therapist which works specifically with a psychiatrist. Like I'm working with two psychosomatic therapists these days. So they work with psychosomatic disorders like chronic headaches, like IBS. So these kind of issues which don't just have psychosomatic, it is understandable, has a basis in both the fields.
Yeah.
Somebody is very equipped with anxiety. Somebody works only with CBT for depression. So it's very okay to ask the person that you're seeing that what therapy do you think would be suitable for me, and what is your approach that you plan to do.
Right.
Second thing I would say to look out for would be that how long do we plan to have this? There is no clear-cut answer that, okay, 2 weeks we'll stop. But at least a rough estimate, because I've seen many people come in for therapy and be like, it's been 2 years, 3 years. So we say there's a phenomenon of dependence also, which develops over time, and it just shifted from your family to the therapist.
Yeah.
So somewhere in your mind, when you go into therapy, you have this, you should be having this in mind. This is temporary, and they'll just give me tools to sail through my life forward. It's not and never a never-ending process. We space it out, then it becomes once in 3 months, then once in 6 months, then a follow-up once a year. But it should not be like every week you are so dependent on your therapist that you're like, I need to talk to you, otherwise my life is not going to move forward.
Right. So that is also a challenge that the therapist should also be aware of to avoid that this is not what we want the patient to be. They don't want them to be dependent. What is your take on prophylactic therapy? The idea that you don't have to be sick to visit a therapist. You can visit a therapist even when you're healthy to just avoid future problems.
Yes, therapy is for everyone. There is this concept of prophylactic, but you need to be that much self-aware or maybe that much mental health positive to go into that. At least I would say if you are planning about it before a major decision of your life, it is wise to do that, because you get a neutral opinion or a neutral perspective on the same. So especially like before marriage, before joining a new company, a promotion. But there's nothing like, see, mental health is not just an absence of mental health illnesses.
Yeah.
So even if you feel nothing is wrong, after you go into therapy, you might realize a lot is.
I
None
equate
of
this,
us is
yeah.
perfect.
I equate this with going to the gym and having a trainer. You might think that you're healthy, but then when the trainer makes you lift 50 kgs or 100 kgs, then you realize, oh man, my muscles weren't as strong as I thought. Similarly, I mean, and you might think that I don't really need to be that healthy, but you don't know that. There might come a time when you are physically, when your body demands that you lift 100 kgs. You don't know what kind of emergency might come up. And so, if it comes, and if your body is not able to do it, that is when there are chances of injury. It's the same principle that applies to mental health as well. Most people can
Oh,
sail
that's
through life.
beautifully put. I'm going to use it elsewhere now. This is very beautifully put. You never know what emergency can arise. Absolutely. So if you're already in therapy, you might have a lot of tools to tackle things that might just come your way in the future. And it is healthy. That's why I say somewhere the change is only going to occur when we start at school level.
Right.
that it is normalized. Kids, if they can mug up this moral education and social science so much, they can understand the concept of three things basically, I say. Menstrual health, basic finance, and mental health. At least for adulthood, we are preparing them for a life beyond school. Now, today, when you look back and see what school has taught me, if overall you ask an adult, they will bluntly give you an answer, nothing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. These three cornerstones of identity and just basic security, sex education, you can extend menstrual health to sex education, and finance and mental health. Yeah, I think that's really beautiful.
Just imagine so many of us around us, how many of us are paying our taxes ourselves?
Yeah.
And if do we even know how to do that? The math सबने पढ़ी है टाइम पे, but basic at least you should know. ऐसा डम नहीं साउंड होना चाहिए सारे टाइम पे, that you are good person, you are working on good position in a company or anywhere, but you are completely unaware of one part. Obviously, a person cannot do everything, but at least a hint of everything is required in today's life. And the more complexities the modern life is going to throw at us, the more we start moving forward.
Correct. So the idea of school should be to prepare you for all of this and teach you and give you the ability to learn whatever it is that you're going to do later. So that learning to learn part is extremely important to be learned in school, and these three cornerstones that you mentioned. I really liked it. I'm going to take that. I'm going to use this for if I ever get a chance to speak at a school or speak to some students, I'm going to talk about this. This is such an important thing.
This is some kind of a wicked move I do whenever I do this college webinars. I make it a point to bring up sex ed, even if I see the teachers cringing and be like, what is happening here? Because we want to normalize it. That see, anyway, people are doing it. Just by
Yeah.
you not talking about it, it's not like they are going to stop doing that.
Oh, absolutely. And apart from sex, even gender identity, I have realized that in every class, there will be at least 5-10 students who are going through that confusion, but because it cannot be spoken, it will it leads to more and more drastic changes the longer you wait or the longer you put off that conversation. So definitely something that should be done at school level itself.
But we say that not just talking to them about on the internet and writing articles is going to help. If you are not able to change in the notion of four or five people in your family, we don't expect to change everybody around us. So with gender, I would just specifically start having this conversation around your family, not to use stigmatizing words towards n number of people that they see. So if you are at least able to influence that your two, three people who are the closest to you, and they are the one who are kind of forced to listen to you.
Yeah.
So if you feel that's why, see, that is how a conversation works. You will ask them a particular thing and they will give you their perspective on this design. So that makes you think further that, okay, if they are thinking this way, that means that this is a general notion in this society and we need to work upon these particular topics forward.
Right. Couple of last questions that I wanted to ask you is more towards mindfulness and spirituality. Are you a spiritual or a religious person?
I would not particularly say I'm very religious, but I'm a God-fearing person.
You're a God-fearing person, but you're not
Yeah.
religious. How do you make that transaction?
I don't do a lot of puja, but because this is something, again, your family embeds this kind of a feeling so that your work is your worship. That
Right.
before sitting on work every day, you say to yourself, I'm not going to do any harm.
Yeah.
Because that I've been given the gift of trying to heal people. So somewhere that way, this is my way of worshipping. So I don't particularly go to a lot of temples and do pujas, but yes. Yeah, but I'm fasting today,
Oh
Navaratri.
wow. That has a whole other list of benefits that has nothing to do with religion and everything to do with your hormonal and endocrine system.
And I don't even think it is a choice when you get married. So a lot of things are as per the family rules. So it's not like you have an option not to.
Sure. But I mean, the way I see it is that a lot of these traditions, religious traditions, have been introduced because it is fundamentally good for you at a physiological level. And it's not easy to convince somebody that it's good for you, so it's easier to say कि नहीं तो भगवान गुस्सा करेंगे, so everybody just shuts up and does it, and so it's fine.
This is, I think, something I've been recently learning and reading about for the, I think, 4 or 5 past months, that whenever there is something that has been followed in your culture and you go back and you will find a scientific basis to that.
Yeah.
Like very simply put, when we say that women who are menstruating but not allowed to enter the kitchen. So when you go back and read scriptures and things, it was more like that because they were so much in pain and uncomfort, they were more like forced to rest. But because passing through generations and cultures is somehow translated into negativity and be like they are impure and hence they should not.
Right.
So this could be one of the explanations. That's why I say whenever there's a cultural thing that was happening or religious thing, we don't know how it is being interpreted today because actually nobody knows what the real interpretation actually is.
Right. That is so true. Even the idea of waking up early. Now the science is beyond question. If you wake up early and if you have 8 hours of sleep, you are healthier. Automatically, you are healthier. If you do intermittent fasting, if you fast regularly, you are automatically healthier. बट ये सब का कारण कोई बताता नहीं है, इसलिए हम लोग को लगता है कि यार ये पुराना जमाने का क्या मतलब है।
That's why. So start inculcating this with a logic because these today's generation, they are very open-minded and why? For everything, they are why should I do this? Give me a reason about it. So maybe rather than how it was forced upon us, be like, yeah, Bhagwan ji gussa ho jayenge, so you have to do this. It's better if we can give them a reason about it, and maybe that's how you preserve your culture. Maybe these things don't seem important when you are very in your teenage, because as you start growing up, you realize your cultural is something that bonds you with rest of the people in your community, and it's not something to be just shunned upon. It's okay to be part of a particular community.
Absolutely. There is so much sense of bonding and feeling of belonging, which often kids these days may not find because their sense of belonging is with online communities and Reddit subgroups and Discord channels, and they are not as real. Although you can meet incredible friends online also, but there is a sense of, surreality about social media, which as you keep growing, you might miss what is something that you can hold, someone that you can actually see or touch. That if, on a small level, the reason that I went back to writing on notebooks with ink pens, I suddenly got tired of writing on iPads and Apple Pencil. As useful as it is, I miss the feeling of pen and paper. And now more and more people are going back to reading physical books. They want something to hold, because otherwise, सब कुछ हवे में ऐसा लगता है.
And again, the concept of screen time, you will have to reduce it somehow. So even if, see, now if I'm scrolling through social media or I am doing something productive, my eyes will be equally fatigued. So it's always better we are advising the things that you can do without a screen time, it is beneficial.
Better.
And one more point I would say, this thing of cultural belonging, this is more in a multiracial community. So this is concept is not very strong here because you feel everybody around us is same. But maybe when you go to places where there are a lot of immigrants, you realize that yes, how important belonging to a community and holding on to your values really is.
Oh, absolutely. You feel so much at home when you meet a Pakistani in Europe. It's insane when you walk into a shop and as an Indian and there's a Pakistani shop owner, you feel like they are your brothers. Because it's all relative, right? It's all about where you are and how close your homes are. So that is something that I was always very amazed by. That brotherhood is a very subjective term. Last question, Rashi. Do you meditate, or are you somebody who counsels about meditation?
I bring up a lot of therapeutic things and I make it a point to emphasize that this is not therapy but therapeutic. So anything can be therapeutic, be it a good bath, be it having your meal, which could be n number of junk food, be it meditation. Yes, all these things are very helpful when you're trying to maybe not even just mental health issue, just a normal life to ground yourself more. And I've been meaning to practice this, but it does not somehow translate on a regular schedule. So it is very off and on, but this is something I'm working upon a goal this year that I need to do it regularly because it will help you. You feel very relaxed and maybe one with yourself. And every day is a journey. Maybe sometimes you feel I know myself a lot, then again, you're still discovering so much about yourself.
Yes, this I've recently got into the habit of meditating every day at 7 o'clock, and I found a nice trick. I got together a community of around 40, 50 people, and every morning at 7 o'clock, I do a Zoom call with them, and we meditate together. And just that feeling of responsibility that there will be 50 people waiting for me to switch on the Zoom call ensures that I am up at 6:45 when I'm meditating at 7. I realize the only way to get things done is to outsource it somehow.
I also joined a community and I'm like, yeah, next week. Oh, me.
Of course. Damn it. Next week is the biggest problem. Dr. Rashi, thank you so much for joining in. This was a lovely conversation. I'm glad that we could connect.
Thank you so much. When you meet with like-minded people, you feel your mind is also growing every day.
Thank you. Done. We are all set.
Thank you so much.
Chalo, bye. Have a great day.
All right, thank you.
See you.